Well, I would say in my 15-year career in school food service, this is by far the most difficult year.
Carolyn Dalowski says that about this being the most difficult year as she considers all the ups and downs she's faced over her 15 years running nutrition service for 13,000 students at Warren Consolidated Schools in Michigan.
What's really difficult this year is it's staffing shortages. It's not new in the school food service world, but the complexity of the food supply chain and the shortages there has really impacted what our job entails. Ordering for a district our size, we probably would spend maybe 3 hours a week on it. And I would say now it's about 20 hours a week. Because it's not as simple as hitting enter and getting all the food that you order through a supplier.
Let's repeat that. Right now, it's taking Carolyn almost 7 times longer than usual, chasing down leads to place all the orders she needs to feed kids in her school district.
It's kind of a game. You race in the morning and you hit enter to get a list of all the out of stocks, and that's really when your work begins because it usually requires conversations to each kitchen to see how desperate need they are of those items. Can they hold off for a little while? Do they have something to replace it? If not, okay, what can I find that's available that we can replace it? And if there's like a hot item, like lunch trays, for an example, which are near impossible to get this year, if they hit stock at GFS and they're quoted as available, like I'll order it at 5:30 in the morning. Or my sales analyst might give me a call in the middle of the night and say, "Hey, they're here. I'll place the order."
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Carolyn Dalowski is in charge of feeding school children. That job is not supposed to sound like a wartime deployment or a humanitarian relief operation, or at best, a time-consuming game, as she put it. Yet here we are, year 3 of disrupted school for kids, and the disruption is now spreading to things like custodial services, transportation, food services.
I mean, you have to be creative when you don't have the staff. I'm working with about 38% decrease in staff overall. It's very common. School food service employees usually are the lowest paid people in the school district. It's hard to compete to the $15, $16 an hour that, Burger King and Target and Amazon are paying.
Look, I'm a mom with school-age kids, so you're going to have to forgive me if I step out of my journalist role for just a second to say, you know how for almost 2 years now we've been saying that the pandemic is a mirror? It's revealing all sorts of truths about how this nation really works and what we really value. So when it comes to all that endless talk about supporting schools and the importance of education and how the kids are our future, well, America, I call BS. I mean, what do you really care about? Really? When people like Carolyn Dalowski can't even find enough workers to help feed children because those workers can get paid more flipping burgers or stuffing Amazon boxes.
Yeah, I've had Zoom meetings with my superintendent with while I'm making salads at a kitchen. You just do what you need to do to serve the kids because we're never going to not feed children. That's never an option. So you do what you need to do.
Not enough people to help feed school kids or to drive kids or even teach them. What is happening to America's public schools? Sure, okay, so this could be a temporary supply chain crisis overlapped with the COVID-driven worker crisis that's hitting most industries. But what has that revealed about public education? And even though if this is just a tough time that lasts, say, another year, when you're a kid, maybe just 10 years old, who's on her third disrupted school year, that is just too long. So what are we going to do about it? Well, let's turn now to Elena Zachary Ross. She's superintendent of Ypsilanti Community Schools in Michigan. They've been going through this just like the rest of the country. Superintendent Zachary Ross, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Magna, for having me.
Describe to us right now a little bit about employee shortages. Have they hit your school district?
Absolutely. We've been impacted. As I was listening to that story in the introduction, I thought about we have been impacted by our food service department, our custodial, transportation, teachers, our tech teams. Every aspect of the school has been impacted by this shortage in staff, educator shortage in every capacity that we have.
Superintendent, can you describe to us then, like on the ground inside schools, what does that mean? What does that mean for the learning and educational experience the kids are getting? What can you not do right now that you used to be able to?
Absolutely. You know, our teachers and educators have been used to pivoting and supporting students all along. However, this has exacerbated them, this pandemic. And so being able to have that balance of safety and meeting the academic needs is becoming a stretch. Our teachers have been working in small groups, meeting students' needs, and that has become more challenging. When I hear about that food service person, director, and the food supply chain, I think about even our nurses. They're usually coming and checking in with students first thing in the morning, but now they're looking at menus to make sure that allergies are being met, dietary restrictions are being met. And so those times where the collaboration is happening, the planning is happening, the innovation, that's not going on right now. We are at merely almost just survival mode to make sure the safety needs are being met so that academics can still go on.
Okay, so tell me more about what survival mode looks like. I mean, for example, you are the superintendent for the Ypsilanti Community Schools. Have you had to step into the classroom?
Absolutely. I've had to step into the building to be a principal. While the principal is teaching, I've had to teach classes. Last week, as a matter of fact, I went into a building and someone said, the administrative assistant said, "Are you here to visit or are you subbing today?" That is not the normal question of the superintendent.
Wow. I mean, how often have you had to sub?
Earlier this year, I had to sub weekly. Recently, it's been a lot better as our principals have had to learn how to be nimble and they've had to utilize staff. But then again, it goes to your first question, when staff, our support staff, who are normally interventionists, who are normally those who are giving that deep support that's needed right now, they are regularly used in a classroom. We have one classroom, as a matter of fact, where the support staff go in. One of them goes 2 days a week, another the third day, and another the rest of the 2 days to fill an opening. And yeah. So those persons' jobs are not being done at the level in which we all would expect them to be.
So Superintendent Zachary Ross, this is exactly the point, right? I mean, there's no doubt that educators can figure out how to cover, I'll put cover in quotes, right? When there's sort of a lack of having enough people in the right places. But then, as you're saying, that means they're also being forced to step outside of what is their area of expertise. Like in any other industry, when a lot of that was happening in a short period of time, people would say something's not right, right? Covering isn't good enough. We're trying to actually, you know, give kids the best educational experiences we can. So can you tell me about why or what you think is causing this seemingly sudden shortage of these critical players in education, food service, paraprofessionals, bus drivers, all the positions that we've been hearing about?
Yes, we keep hearing about this great resignation, and we see now in the private sector where there's these $2,000 signing bonuses. There's you can get paid the first week you work, increase in pay. And so we're seeing people, first of all, be caught out to use their services because the private sector is in need. Secondly, folks have been over the last 2 years, they understand that there is an opportunity to work from home and use their same talents and have that same rate of pay. And so we see people staying home to work from home and enjoying that flexibility because of the pandemic. And they're still maybe have some concerns about being in the public sector. And then lastly, let's just be real. It is a lot of stress and strain in this role. And so they're wondering, is my safety being exposed to multiple people? Is that the right place for me? And should I go into the field of education? Because right now, everyone has a focus, a light on education, and it makes people shy away from that light sometimes.
Mm. Okay, so you've laid out a bunch of really important reasons that we're going to dig into a little bit later in the future. But tell me a little bit, folks may have heard that, for example, in Detroit, the shortages are so severe that I think they've even cut back on the number of hours kids are in school. Has that had to happen in Ypsilanti?
Well, we have not gone to I know several districts have gone to Monday through Thursday with Friday remote. We have not used that option. However, we have, unfortunately, twice this year had to go to remote learning because of staffing shortages. We just did not have enough staff to operate the school day.
Okay, so Superintendent Elena Zachary Ross is superintendent for the Ypsilanti Community Schools in Michigan. Stand by, Superintendent, because we've got a lot more to talk about when we come back. We are looking closely at the staffing shortages and also the supply chain shortages and how they're hitting America's public schools and really the impact that's having on the children those schools are meant to serve and what we as a nation need to do about it. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about shortages in America's public school caused by, yes, the pandemic overall, supply chain issues, and staffing shortages, and the impact that's having on kids. Let's listen to On Point listener Jenna Black. She's a teacher in Maine. She says her school has been lacking substitute teachers.
We're always happy to help each other out. That's not the problem. It's just, you know, it's hard to plan, you know, when you think you're going to have a free period and then all of a sudden you're covering for somebody else's class. And I understand that this is a real challenge and that our public schools spend a lot of time serving as childcare as much as it does education. But I just want to put out there that this is a really challenging time for the teachers involved.
That's Jenna Black, who listens to On Point from Maine. I'm joined today by Elena Zachary Ross. She is the superintendent of Ypsilanti Community Schools in Michigan. And Superintendent Zachary Ross, give me a second here to compliment you, because I have to say you are just a terrific representative for your schools. And sometimes I get a little frustrated with educators because there's a lot of edu-speak, if you know what I mean, in talking about schools and public education, and you don't have any of that. You're a straight shooter, super smart, and the real talk part I deeply appreciate. It's just been really refreshing to listen to you. So I just want to say thank you for that. We need much more of that in public discourse in America right now. So can we continue with the real talk here for another?
Thank you. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So real talk, I get it. Educators can figure out how to get bodies in classrooms. That's always going to happen. They'll make it happen somehow. But can you describe to me what you really think the impact is on the actual education right now that that your teachers and school workers are able to provide to kids?
You know, I just heard from that teacher that reported, and I was thinking about her missing her planning time. And we expect teachers, and they do a marvelous job of, you know, planning and pivoting and meeting students where they are. Yet when they can't spend the adequate time planning, looking at their data, doing the things that they have known that have been best practices for years, and now we've asked them, come on, now it's post-pandemic learning. You have to do this acceleration. How are they able to do that and meet the students' needs when they are subbing in classrooms, when they're going from, they're teaching math, but we say, go into the language arts class, go into the specials classroom and teach on your prep. And so when we take away that important planning time, when we take away the time that's needed to really look and dig down into the data, or even make, how about you said, as you're a parent, make that important parent phone call to strengthen the parent and school communications. It takes away from the student's learning environment. It takes away our ability to really hone into what that student needs and being able to teach them right where they are. Right now they're getting what our teachers can do, but not necessarily what they're able to do or what they want to do for the student in the classroom.
So the kids just frankly aren't getting the, not just in your district, but everywhere where this is happening. Would you say that kids just aren't getting the quality of education they deserve?
I would agree. I would certainly agree. And although we really celebrate how much students have been able to pivot and what they've learned, even during the pandemic, we know that our teachers want to give them even more because they quite frankly need it right now.
Mm. You know, and I'm also thinking about the broader school community, food service we talked about earlier, transportation, paraprofessionals, really, really critical people in the lives of particularly vulnerable students. I mean, there's a whole constellation that seems to be feeling really even excessive pressures right now. So there's no place in the system where there's any give. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, and why that's important is because all of those individuals, we think so much of the administrators or the teachers, but we cannot, as a school district, run without those essential workers. So when we're short a parapro and one parapro needs to work together in that day with two or three students when they're used to working one-on-one, now that student who needs that individual time, who needs to take a break outside of the classroom, who is learning how to navigate being back in school all day, every day, now when we see behaviors escalate, it's not a surprise. Because they haven't had that support that we've already built in. We've said they need it, but because of shortages, they're not receiving it. And so we see an impact not only on individual students, but it impacts that entire classroom.
Mm, okay. Well, Superintendent Zachary Ross, hang on here for just a second, because the ripple effect of that impact is something that also extends then back into the home, right? For in the lives of families and parents as well. So we talked to Betty Nostrand. She's a mom in Flint, Michigan. Her son David is 11 years old, and she says he's been dealing with a slew of mental health issues, including ADHD and disruptive mood dysregulation disorder.
He can become very violent. He can become very depressed. He's a runner who will run at any time. Doesn't matter where he's at.
And when Betty says David is a runner, What she means is that he runs away. And that's exactly what happened in August when David was at school.
Somebody had came in and informed us that David had ran. So I immediately grabbed my keys, went down there. We searched the school. They found him playing in traffic.
Betty says she's been calling for David's supervision since the family moved to Flint about 2 years ago. Supervision in school. And it wasn't until after that incident she just told us about that David received a plan that called for a full-time aide. But with the staffing shortage, it wasn't until late September that he actually got that help. And the help didn't last for very long.
David wears a tracker. And this paraprofessional was so upset about the fact the tracker had a listen-in device, a listen-in option that I don't even use, that he broke the tracker, taking it off my son. And so he was fired. And now David is back to no paraprofessional and cannot go outside, cannot do anything. And he ran from school again.
Betty says the school could not promise that they would have another paraprofessional to work with David until at least after the holiday break. And while the current staffing shortage isn't a situation schools can dictate or really even control, Betty says she hopes schools can provide better the help that students like David need.
Without them, my son can't have a normal education. He can't be safe without a parapro. For the parapros, for the children, they've got to do better.
That's Betty Nostrand, a mom in Flint, Michigan. Well, I'd like to bring into the conversation now Kobe Levin, a reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit, covering inequity in schools, and with us from Detroit. Kobe, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you know Betty's story actually pretty well. What are the lessons we ought to draw from what Betty and her son David are having to go through right now?
So the individual struggles that parents encounter when, for instance, a special education aide isn't available for their child are really a systemic problem. So thinking about David Nostrand, he'll have some adult with him during the day. You know, the school is keeping an eye on him. And so the question is, who are those adults? They're folks who should be working with other students with special needs, maybe students who need really badly to catch up on reading after a difficult year of virtual learning. But they have to watch David because there's a staffing shortage and the school can't find a paraprofessional for him yet. So when a student like David suffers, all students in the district will suffer, especially those with special needs, especially those who have learning to catch up on right now. So it really is a whole system problem. And it's showing us once again in this pandemic how everybody in a system, an interconnected system like a school, really relies on all of the pieces being in place.
Now, we happen to be sort of focusing on Michigan this hour with you in Detroit and Superintendent Zachary Ross in Ypsilanti. But, I mean, how – we've been hearing stories from all over. How national is this shortage that's hitting public schools?
It is very national. this is an economic situation. I mean, there's market forces at play here that are above my pay grade and that are affecting, you know, every industry, I think. What's being highlighted in the case of schools is that they cannot compete with other low-wage industries. The grocery industry was mentioned. We do have an Amazon warehouse here in the Detroit area. And so folks who are doing really essential work in schools could easily make more doing a job that is, frankly, easier, you know, and less critical to our society. And schools really have their hands tied in a lot of cases. I mean, they can raise wages a little bit. They can offer a hiring incentive using federal funds. But we are still seeing all across the country difficulties in hiring.
This is where you just have to take the deep breaths, okay? Because we're talking about essential workers for education, right? The thing that's supposed to help the entire nation by setting up the next generation for success. And yet, as you just said, and as Superintendent Zachary Ross said, those very same workers can make more money, have an easier job, perhaps more control over their hours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, by stuffing boxes at Amazon, at the warehouse next door. I mean, something is fundamentally wrong when that is true. So let's start picking away at some of the possible solutions. Kobe, you mentioned federal dollars. Look, there were billions of dollars in the COVID relief packages that were passed in 2020. What can schools do with that money? Have they been doing enough of it? Have districts been using that money in a way that can help, push back against the current staffing shortages?
Yeah, absolutely. A good portion of that money has already gone out in Michigan. The largest wave of funds is still to come. Stay tuned on that. There are many, many districts that are investing directly in mental health and in support staff who kind of hold school systems together. And also are in place to help students recover from the effects of the pandemic, both academic and emotional. Many of these same hiring issues come into play. For instance, I've had school officials tell me that they want to hire more mental health workers, but can't find them. Same thing goes for special education aides. They could be using their federal dollars for that, and they just can't. You know, the folks are not there. The bodies are not there. Another example is a district here in the Detroit metro area that did hire mental health workers, social workers, using their federal dollars. And then those folks ended up covering classrooms because there weren't enough substitute teachers. Mm. The federal spending, COVID relief spending, is going to stretch out over a number of years. We're just beginning that process. But COVID is wreaking havoc with schools' ability, even with the funds in hand, to create a stable environment for students.
Yeah. Superintendent Zachary Ross, let me turn back to you. I want to also acknowledge that when we say the districts, those districts are tied to their local municipalities. And we have to point out that the local municipalities may have also been suffering due to the economic impact of COVID since March of 2020, right? So there's like a really big circle of stakeholders here when in the discussion that we're having. Like even in places where perhaps there'd be a greater desire to significantly increase pay, perhaps maybe that municipality is struggling a little and can't do that at this moment. That's an important underlying factor that I wanted to point to. However, Superintendent, a couple of minutes ago, you said something which I just thought was so spot on, and that is the pandemic has revealed that these very qualified workers, there's a private sector demand right now. The conditions of the work that the private sector is offering might be better, and the pay might be higher. So that's a real systemic change that's going to last for quite a while. What needs to change to make work in education more attractive again? I mean, for the longest time, it seemed like we got by with saying, well, maybe your pay isn't so great now, but, you're a really mission-driven person and you love to work with kids, so that is a reward in and of itself. But clearly, that's just not enough anymore.
It's not enough, and we have to put that on the table for sure. Is that some people in the private worlds, they see that their work wasn't as meaningful, and we want to invite them to the field of education, and then we also have to really think within our organization, what can we do? So, for instance, in our county, in Washtenaw County, we have a Pair Pro to Teacher program working with Eastern Michigan University. So we have to build our own. We are looking at how do we do that? How do we expand educators to include our child's first teachers, the parents, and getting them to come in to work in these food service? Maybe they have hours to work during the lunch hour. We're utilizing those unsung heroes that we never thought about before to partner with us to meet these needs, because they might not come through the normal channels that we've had in the past.
And so Kobe Levin, you want to respond to that? I mean, what more can districts and schools do?
So, you know, a lot of school leaders would point out at this point that there's a systemic issue here that goes well beyond the pandemic. Folks in Michigan have been talking about a leaky educator pipeline for a long time. We have fewer people going into teacher preparation programs, fewer people graduating from those. Even before the pandemic, there was talk in some areas of the state of teacher shortages. So, now, one way to address that would be to attract more people into the profession on the front end. The state superintendent here has been talking about a program that would provide tuition reimbursement for college students who go into education programs. You know, folks say that they tell me, you know, this is a really complicated problem. No simple fix. It's been building for a very long time. It predates the pandemic. Mm. And so it's going to require a whole range of imaginative solutions to get us back on our feet here.
Well, we're talking about shortages, staffing shortages in America's public schools. And yes, the complicated systemic problem that it reveals. And we will explore a little bit more when we come back on how to fix it. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the shortages, staffing shortages in America's public schools and the impact that's having on the kids that those schools are supposed to be serving. Here's On Point listener Rebecca Rocha from Windsor, California. She says she has a daughter with a severe disability who usually has a one-on-one instructional aide.
Her instructional aide was out on a bereavement leave, and I was asked to keep my daughter home from school. So she was asked to miss 2 days of school. She missed one, which I informed the school was illegal. She was then placed in an alternative classroom for about 5 more days, and she was not allowed to participate in her regularly scheduled classes because the district was unable to send anyone in to take the place of her instructional aide. I ended up filing an official complaint with the state of California, and the district was found to be out of compliance and was required to submit a plan.
Now, Rebecca also told us that while everything ended up working out, staffing shortages have particularly affected students in special education, like her daughter. And again, she listens from Windsor, California. I'm joined today by Kobe Levin. He's a reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit, covering inequity in schools. And Elena Zachary Ross joins us. She's superintendent for Ypsilanti Community Schools in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Superintendent Zachary Ross, let me ask you, yes, this is a complex problem that, as Kobe said, predates the pandemic. So we're not going to find the silver bullet today. Completely understand that. But I think there are areas to push on a little bit. I mean, part of the problem has just been people being underpaid. I mean, we've talked a lot about paraprofessionals. They're oftentimes some of the lowest paid people in a school district, as far as I understand. That seems to be a place to make some some long-term change. And I think we're seeing some districts do that. For example, I was reading about how in Wake Forest in North Carolina, they just recently voted to approve raises of up to 40% for some of their lowest paid workers. So going up from $11.80 an hour to $16.20 an hour. That's a big jump, starting to compete with, you know, the Amazons and Burger Kings of the world that we talked about earlier. Is that something that needs to happen in your district?
Absolutely. During the pandemic, we settled all of our contracts by changing our scale, number one, and by giving increases. However, I think you're talking about something that was brought up at the very beginning, and I'm so glad that you did. This pandemic has showed us the importance and value in public education, and our system of financing schools across this state has been broken for a long time. And so this increase that we've received from ESSER funds has been wonderful and the CARES Act, yet we've got to systemically change the funding for our schools in the state of Michigan. And if this is a problem that we've seen all this time, this is the opportunity. All of us can speak on it. So that's why I'm excited that you're talking about this important issue on Point today.
Mm. Kobe, tell us a little bit more. I mean, specifically about Michigan, what's the funding for public schools like? How does it work there?
Sure. So we've got a largely state-based public funding system with local taxes paying for things like school buildings. So kind of a split system with local taxes still being an important aspect of things. And there has been I would say momentum in recent years about shifting up the funding formula to recognize that some schools face more significant costs if you have a larger number of English language learners or students with other special needs. It's just going to be more expensive to educate them. The research on that is very, very solid, and some states have already moved to a system that recognizes that and really sends a lot of extra money in the direction of districts that are dealing with higher needs. Michigan has not made that shift just yet. They've taken steps in that direction, and I think a lot of folks are keeping an eye on this period in 2 or 3 years when the federal funding from COVID will run out. And we're going to have a really significant conversation, because if we go back to pre-pandemic funding levels without this federal cushion, it's hard to see any substantial change to, as you're mentioning, the wages for paraprofessionals.
You know, that the shift in funding and how much more expensive actually education has become is something that's happening nationwide. I'm sitting here in Massachusetts, and there was a very important report that came out several years ago that said because of, providing the kind of education that English language learners needed, special ed, as you talked about, also just the rise in healthcare costs, for example, for people who work in education, that Massachusetts was more than $1 billion short in what it needed to adequately fund its schools. Everyone was like in a real tizzy about that, but it still took years and multiple chances in the state legislature here to fix that. And that was even before the pandemic. So your point is well taken about how hard questions need to be asked about if we actually, as a society, recognize how much the demands on educators and what's needed for a high quality education, if we recognize how much that has changed and how much it actually costs. So, Superintendent Zachary Ross, do you think that recognition is out there?
You know, we've done an important study in Michigan, the School Research Finance Collaborative, and then it was followed by a report by Dr. David Arson. And so we've put the data out there. I think for us, it was $600 million we needed here in Michigan. Yet the actions are not matching the report just yet, because the examples that you gave, regarding, and we named the student here in this interview, David. Mm-hmm. When we think about students like David, we know he's going to need more for him to have the equitable educational opportunity than his classmates. And if he needs more, let's give him more. And we're going to have to have the funding to match it. And not just this funding that we've gotten that will last for the 3 years, we're going to need it beyond. And so we want to ensure that our students in my district, but across Michigan, receive what they need. And we've just got to put the funding behind it. And if there's those opportunities where people can come into education by having loan forgiveness and all these other programs, those will incentivize people to come into this field.
So, Kobe, talk to us a little bit more about specifically what's been happening in Detroit, where you are, because recently Detroit had to move to going to 4 days in school and 1 day Fridays online, and that caused quite a bit of heartache in Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the district is dealing with staff shortage issues, like many folks in Michigan and really across the country. There's been a number of COVID outbreaks. The pandemic is absolutely not over for schools. And as well, they say that there are mental health issues, but both for students and for staff. Just that this fall has been really, really difficult for many folks, many students in particular. We're talking about a return to the classroom after a year. It's been a hard year. And so everybody is just having a hard time, I think is a fair summary of the superintendent's explanation here. Yes, that is a huge burden on parents. We had parents say, they told us, the Board of Education, that if the district went ahead with some of these closures, they would lose their job. You know, they would need to be home with their child and they would be fired. We also had parents say, hey, we get it. You know, we see that teachers are stretched really thin, and they need a break too right now. So I think there's just a recognition of an incredible amount of strain on the system right now. And the district is saying that these are temporary solutions and they're hoping that things will even out.
Okay. And so a system under incredible amount of strain just can't last forever. Systems break down eventually. What is Detroit tried to do to stave off that breakdown? I'm seeing reporting here from Chalkbeat about hourly wages being raised.
Yeah. So in November, in October, the district came to an agreement with its unionized support staff. So this would include special education aides. They got a really significant raise. They went from roughly $12.78 an hour to a minimum of $15, and in some cases higher, plus really significant bonuses. So that's a really big deal. And who knows, maybe in 2 months we'll be talking about how that was really effective and it put an end to these shortages. I think even economists are struggling with their crystal balls right now. And it's just going to take a minute for some of these changes to play out. And in the meantime, parents and students are really under the gun here.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been restraining myself all hour, I'll be honest. I can't hold back anymore. Look, all of us here know that in the United States, this country has no problem paying for what it thinks is actually important. Right? It just doesn't. We have a $700+ billion defense department budget this year. That means in 10 years, we're going to spend $7 trillion on defense. $7 trillion, okay? And whereas we're having this conversation about public education across the United States under these incredible strains that have been revealed by COVID, they predate COVID. Kobe, to use your words, the system's under incredible strain, and it will eventually, systems like that break down. I argue that the issue is, in public education, when things break down, the consequences of that breakdown are largely invisible to the nation as a whole, because who bears the cost of it? It's the kids and their education. And they can't spend the time going to state houses, a few of them can, but not enough of them, to say, we're breaking down. Our future is being broken down in front of us because we're not getting the education we deserve. They can't vote. So that's what I'm saying. That's why I mean it's invisible. So Superintendent Zachary Ross, I mean, do you feel like when America talks about how much it values education, there's really just blowing smoke? Because if we did, we wouldn't be having this problem right now, even with the pandemic.
You know, I support and applaud you for saying that statement, because they tell us when you want to look at what we value, look at our checkbook and look at our calendar. And right now, we've seen this money come into schools, which we appreciate, yet all of a sudden the money was available. This money should have always been allocated to schools. We know that our students are our most valuable contributors to our future. And so right now we need to look at what's going to happen after this 3 years. This funding formula needs to be changed. We need to ensure that those most vulnerable are able to get what they need even after this, the ESSER III money comes. And it's time for people to put money where we say we value most, our children.
Mm. You know, I know a lot of people listening might be saying right now, well, teachers unions are, you know, they advocate for good pay for their teachers, and that a lot of the money has been going to that. And, you know, point taken, teachers unions in many places are powerful and influential players in all of this. But that's why talking about the larger constellation of who works in schools is so important. Again, the paras, the drivers, the food service workers, the administrative aides, all of them, because they're the ones really that all of a sudden we're all of a sudden we're looking at and saying, oh my gosh, you're not here. And we relied on you as much as we did, and we didn't know it. So Kobe, I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about other ways, other ideas, if any, that you've heard on things that people are willing to try to help get through this period and maybe even start tackling some of the long-term problems?
Sure. So I'm really glad you raised this idea of a sort of constellation or interconnected system supporting increasing teacher salaries, which happens to be really popular with the public, doesn't solve a real significant issue with the folks who we are learning are essential workers in schools, substitute teachers, aides, other support staff. I've written actually quite a bit about teacher turnover and teacher shortages in areas of Michigan. And one of the things that comes through is that it is not just pay that pushes teachers out of the profession or discourages people from entering it in the first place. It's the sense that they're doing much more than they've ever had to before. They're the social worker. They're the school nurse. They're the special education aide. And the reason for that is because there aren't enough other adults often in schools, in classrooms, supporting teachers. And that makes it really difficult for these communities, these systems, to function, with each person being fully supported and also fully able to do the job that they are there to do. So how do you change that? A new contract for paraprofessionals is maybe a start. But there's a bigger conversation to be had in Michigan about our overall funding formula, how, for instance, special education students are supported. In our current system here in Michigan, special education spending comes out of general budgets. So we sort of rob Peter to pay Paul in order to support special education students. Other students lose out. And I think if you look across the system, you'll see lots of other examples of that kind of dynamic playing out.
Mm. Superintendent Zachary Ross, we've just got less than a minute to go. And as we wrap up, my last question for you is, how has all this been for you? Have you had a moment where you just thought, I'm not sure I can do this anymore, for all the reasons that we just talked about?
You know, it's certainly been taxing on me personally. I've felt overwhelmed by finding ways to meet the needs of everyone. Yet when I watch everyone step up. We've talked about how the parapro, the food service folks, the transportation teachers, administrators, they've stepped up. So of course, as the leader, I'm stepping up with them. Yet I'm glad that we can be the Pied Piper and say, let's fix this. Let's not just say that it's okay. It's time to make some change.
Well, Alina Zachary Ross is the superintendent of Ypsilanti Community Schools in Michigan. Superintendent Zachary Ross, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Kobe Levin, reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit, covering inequity in schools, with us from Detroit. Kobe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.